Frenchie McCormick lived by herself in a Texas ghost town for almost 30 years. She refused to leave because of a promise she made to the love of her life. Frenchie is a folklore legend in Texas, but much of her life story remains a mystery. Much, but not all. This is the story of Frenchie McCormick and her beloved town of Tascosa, Texas. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. The Texas Panhandle was the last area of Texas to be settled, and there are so many stories of fascinating people who called this area home when it was a lawless area with towns full of rough and tough people of the wild frontier. Frenchie McCormick lived in the Panhandle town of Tascosa, Texas, when it was the toughest, wildest, liveliest, and most lawless cow town of the frontier. And she survived it all. She was literally the last one standing in old Tascosa before it was deserted and became a ghost town. To understand Frenchie, you have to understand her town, its history, and major events that make Tascosa legendary. Knowing that may help you understand why Frenchie was willing to remain there when everyone else deserted this town. Today, all the remains of the Texas Panhandle town of Tascosa are two crumbling buildings. But Tascosa had the reputation of being one of the toughest towns in Texas during its heyday in the 1880s. Tascosa was formed around 1876 and was named for the swamp-like area where the Canadian River meets a local creek. This town was known for that crossing because it's where cowboys passed on their way to the railhead and cattle markets in Dodge City. Large ranches that formed in the region used the town of Tascosa as an assembling point. Tascosa was known as the cowboy capital of the plains, and with good reason. Lawmen and outlaws either became long-term residents or quickly left. Those who tarried often became permanent residents of Boot Hill. That's the name of the town's cemetery that's said to have been established by the town's first sheriff, Caleb Willingham, who shot the town's first villain, and the town needed a place to bury that old villain, who died with his boots on. Tascosa served the cattle ranchers for 100 miles in every direction. It was a popular rendezvous area for cowhands who would frequent bars and dance halls after hard labor on the sagebrush and sands of the Canadian River Valley. With its gambling houses and its brothels, Tascosa was visited by all kinds of characters, including a couple of men who were well known in the Old West, Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. When Billy and his gang stopped in Tascosa in the fall of 1878, he wasn't known as Billy the Kid. He was just Billy, an outlaw with 100 stolen horses he intended to sell to several big panhandle ranches. And soon, he was stealing cattle and horses from those ranchers and moving the horse and cattle back and forth to New Mexico. He and his gang kept doing what they loved to do, stirring up a mess of trouble and chaos. And Billy's gang wasn't the only one stealing from ranchers across the Texas Panhandle. It was a big problem at the time, and ranchers were fed up with that stealing and the effect it had on their business. So by March of 1881, ranchers in and around Tascosa formed the Panhandle Stock Association for the mutual benefit and protection of the ranchers. A $250 reward was posted for the apprehension of anyone stealing cattle belonging to an association member. And as it grew, the organization hired inspectors, detectives, and attorneys. They worked together to arrest and prosecute rustlers operating against area ranchers, both large and small. In 1881, the association ordered legendary lawman Pat Garrett to track down Billy the Kid. This would lead Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid to their own infamous stories of cat and mouse and Billy's luck running out at the hands of Pat Garrett. But that's a long, twisted tale for another day. Tascosa was thriving and growing thanks to the Panhandle Stock Association, bringing new stability and cooperation to the area. At one point, it was an economic rival to the thriving Dodge City, Kansas, with its cattle, farming, and general merchandising. But in 1883, between 160 and 200 cowboys tried to rise up and get what they felt they were owed. Tascosa briefly became the center of what's known as the Great Cowboy Strike. A group of cowboys got fed up with their hard work and the lack of pay they were getting for it, so they told the owners of the five largest panhandle ranches that they were going on strike. And they did. The cowboys were paid about $30 a month for their sunup to sundown labor in oftentimes harsh conditions. And sometimes cowboys would be given some calves or even some mavericks and work their own herds out on the range. This was how ranchers had gotten their start. It had been done for a long time. But trouble started brewing with those cowboys when a lot of the old ranch owners left, and investors from other states, even other countries, had taken over many of the ranches. The syndicates, as they were known, didn't give away calves. That change was at the heart of the cowboys' issues, and it's what led to the cowboy strike. The cowboys asked for a raise in wages to $50 a month, and they had hoped the strike would disrupt the spring roundup. Newspapers covered the story in many other states, referring to it as the Texas Range War. The Colorado Weekly wrote the following about the strike. An ordinary cowboy is as explosive as a nitroglycerin bomb and a good deal more dangerous. We shall watch with great interest, not caring much which side whips or gets whipped. But the strike didn't blow up or cause much of an issue at all. Unfortunately for those cowboys who started it, the Great Cowboy Strike wasn't so great. It ended after 2.5 months. Two of the major ranches fired striking cowboys on the spot. Others offered a small raise and fired anyone who didn't accept it. The only violence spurred by that cowboy strike came after it was over. In the history books, it's known as the Big Fight at the Jenkins Saloon. Locals called it the Tascosa Gunfight. And at the time, it was more famous than a gunfight you've probably heard of before, the gunfight at the OK Corral. There were more fatalities and shots fired in the Tascosa gunfight than at Tombstone a few years earlier. Now remember, the cowboy strike had been unsuccessful, but it had brought a lot of cowboys from rival ranches and locations to one place, Tascosa, Texas. The rivalry between members of two Texas Panhandle ranch factions, the LS Ranch's Home Rangers and a group of small ranchers known as the System, led to the gunfight. Well, that and a girl. There's always a girl involved, isn't there? Sally Emery worked at the Jenkins Saloon and had dumped her boyfriend, Lamar Lim Woodruff. He was the saloon's bartender, who was said to be a member of the System. Sally began dating Ed King, a member of the LS Rangers. In the days preceding the fight, a drunken Ed King would taunt Woodruff, calling him Pretty Lim and endeavoring to humiliate him as Ed King tried to force Woodruff to call him Daddy. On March 21st of 1886, Woodruff got his revenge. After midnight, four cowboys from the LS Ranch, Ed King, Frank Vallee, Fred Chilton, and John Lang, rode into town where Ed King had planned to meet up with his girlfriend, Sally Emery. While King headed to a street corner, Chilton and Lang hitched their horses in front of what was known as the Equity Bar. As King dismounted, he heard someone call out for him from the shadows of the Dunn and Jenkins Saloon. He moved toward the sound of the voice and was shot in the face. Woodruff, the saloon's bartender, had hired fellow System members to help him, and they rushed outside and shot King again. They just wanted to make sure he was dead. Sally, King's girlfriend, fled the scene, and John Lang called for help and tried to make a run for Dunn and Jenkins Saloon. At that moment, Woodruff, along with three other men, exited the back of the saloon. Gunfire erupted with the bartender and one of his fellow hitmen being hit themselves. Frank Vallee ran to his shack, and as he opened the door, he was fatally struck in the eye by a bullet. Fred Chilton shot and killed an innocent bystander in the process, and then he was shot dead by someone hiding behind a woodpile outside the saloon. As Chilton was dying, he handed his pistol to Lang, who fled as he was firing shots. The LS cowboy was finally joined by the local sheriff and his deputy, but by then, the Tascosa gunfight was over. And before long, Tascosa, Texas would be over too. Two things destroyed Tascosa, Texas. One was barbed wire. It was put up as a boundary for the ranches in the area in the 1880s, and the open passage was gone for cowboys. And two was the railroad, or the lack of it. The Fort Worth and Denver Railway was expected to revitalize Tascosa. It offered hope that businesses would thrive again, thanks to the people traveling through the area. William Lee of the Ellis Ranch let the railroad bypass Tascosa into a town he had started west, called Cheyenne. Railroad bypassed it, barbed wire encircled it. Most businesses moved out of town and opened again in Amarillo. By 1890, the residents of Tascosa dwindled to 350. And by 1915, the Panhandle was adding new towns, and the residents who remained in Tascosa moved to be part of growing towns that offered new opportunities for prosperity. That same year, the courthouse was closed, and Tascosa was left with a population of 15 people. One by one, the few remaining residents moved away, with the exception of a woman named Frenchie McCormick. She was the widow of a Tascosa businessman, and she held out the last town member standing, calling Tascosa home until 1939. No one will ever know who I am. That was the vow of Frenchie McCormick when she and her husband Mickey arrived in the booming cow town of Tascosa, Texas in 1880. Frenchie was vivacious and fun to be around, and beautiful with dark hair and blue eyes. People were always curious about Frenchie, her life, and her story. But no matter how hard people tried, no matter what they said, Frenchie refused to share much. She even told people she preferred to die a mystery. But over time, little by little, bits and details of her life have emerged, either from Frenchie's occasional moments when she shared more than she meant to about her life, or witnesses who worked with her in her younger years. Frenchie McCormick was born Elizabeth McGraw near Baton Rouge, Louisiana, on August 11th of 1852. Her father was a Mississippi steamboat captain. After the death of her mother, Lizzie, as her father called her, ran away from a convent in Baton Rouge. Ran away with a young man she fancied herself in love with. They ended up in St. Louis for a while, but the man she fled Louisiana with deserted her. Alone, she drifted until she ended up in Dodge City, Kansas, where she earned her saloon girl name, Frenchie, because she was from Louisiana, spoke French, and was considered fancy because she had a higher than average education and could read and write. There have long been questions about how Frenchie earned her money while she was drifting, before she met her husband. Rumors say she may have been a girl of the night, as some called it in the Old West, selling herself to survive. And that could be part of Frenchie McCormick's story. But it's important to know that some people could confuse ladies of the night with saloon girls. You see, we know Frenchie McCormick was a dancer and saloon girl around Dodge City, Kansas. And it's important to know that saloon girls were considered unladylike by women in town, but saloon girls looked down on prostitution. There were two types of bad girls in the West. The worst types, according to the proper women of the day, were the painted ladies who made their living by offering paid sex in the numerous brothels, parlor houses, and cribs of the Western towns. The second type of bad girl were the saloon and dance hall women, who, contrary to some popular thinking, were generally not prostitutes. This tended to occur only in the very low-class saloons. A saloon or dance hall girl's job was to brighten the evenings of the many lonely men of the Western towns. Starved for female companionship, the saloon girl would sing for the men, dance with them, talk to them, and induce them to remain in the bar buying drinks and spending money on games. And the girls made good money for their time. They could earn as much as $10 a week. Saloon girls definitely stood out in their towns, and most other women of the town looked down on these women because they wore brightly colored skirts that were scandalously short for the time, mid-shin or knee length. Their arms and shoulders were bare, and their dresses were decorated with sequins and fringe. The term painted ladies was coined for saloon girls because they had the audacity to wear makeup and dye their hair. Many were armed with pistols or jeweled daggers concealed in their boot tops or tucked between their breasts to keep the boisterous cowboys in line. Most saloon girls were considered good women by the men they danced and talked with, often receiving lavish gifts from admirers. In most places, the owners of saloons demanded that the saloon girls be treated as ladies, and that had to be strictly observed. In those saloons that weren't the low-class ones, any man who mistreated these women would quickly become a social outcast, and if he insulted one, he would very likely be killed. Whether Frenchie McCormick was a saloon girl or prostitute, well, that truth went to the grave with Frenchie. But we do know she was no shrinking violet. She was tough, and there are many stories of Frenchie taking part in boxing matches in the saloon where she worked. She didn't let anyone take advantage of her, that's for sure. The women of the Old West couldn't afford to be genteel. They were living in a rough, lawless environment, and it was either take care of yourself or die trying. In 1880, Frenchie was ready to leave Dodge City when she heard about the Texas Panhandle. She heard stories of cowboys and prosperous times and decided to pack up all of her saloon girl dresses and take the stage to a town called Mobeetie, Texas. And it was in Mobeetie that Frenchie found the only person who could break through her tough exterior. Frenchie met the man she would marry, Mickey McCormick. He was an Irish gambler and a business operator from Tascosa, Texas. He was in town with friends, and they met at the gaming tables where Frenchie worked. Mickey claimed that he always won when Frenchie was beside him. They fell in love and decided to head back to Mickey's home in Tascosa. Mickey operated a saloon, and Frenchie dealt cards in the gambling rooms that Mickey operated behind a saloon and entertained the colorful personalities who passed through. Frenchie told friends that she and Mickey talked about their past, their mistakes, and where they had been, and they decided together that they would focus on the future and just never look back. On September 26th of 1882, Frenchie and Mickey were married, and they would spend the next 30 years together in the town they loved. Frenchie was said to have changed once she got married. She was solely focused on building her life with Mickey. She quit dealing cards, and she and Mickey moved into a two-room adobe home he had built for them. By 1887, Tascosa had fallen on hard times. The McCormicks lost their business. Mickey resorted to trying to haul freight to earn money, and he would hunt and gather all the food he could find to provide for them. Frenchie and Mickey were two of the town members who continued to believe that Tascosa was going through a rough patch and would return to its former glory. But that dream, it just didn't come true. By October of 1912, Mickey had been diagnosed with a kidney disease that caused inflammation and some other health issues. Mickey collapsed, and within hours, he was dead. The day Mickey was buried was the day Frenchie made a vow to the love of her life. She would remain in Tascosa, near his grave, until she died. Friends say Frenchie only ever referred to Mickey in the present tense. She never referred to herself as a widow. She was, and always would be, Mickey's girl. In 1931, a writer with the Kansas City Star visited Tascosa, Texas. His name was Abe McDonald, and he wanted to see the town in person. This town had become infamous with all the stories of the Old West, the characters who had lived there, and the one woman who still lived in town, Frenchie McCormick. He wanted to meet her. He arrived in Tascosa to find her in her little adobe home with two rooms. The house Mickey had built now stood alone in a clump of weeds and bushes. Its walls of sun-dried earthen bricks were worn so thin by the rains and winds of half a century that they had sagged inward and had cracked in places. The reporter even noted that you could see the finger marks of Frenchie McCormick where she had plastered red mud in long streaks over the cracks. Rags and old hats were stuffed in the windows that were broken. Wild buffalo grass grew thickly right up to the door, and the rickety, weather-beaten door shook as he knocked on it and was greeted by Frenchie McCormick. Abe McDonald spent a lot of time with Frenchie, listening as she shared about the Old West and her life in Tascosa. She explained, "When I came to Tascosa, there were only three other American women in the panhandle. I've seen wild times in this old town. When I came here, there was no organization of any kind, no post office, no mail. The only way to get a letter out was to give it to some cowboy who was going up to Dodge City. We had no courts, no law, except the law of the six gun that everyone carried day and night. I saw Tascosa grow to a population of 500 with a plaza banked by saloons, stores, and gambling houses and dance halls. And then I saw Tascosa decline until two or three of the original homes are left. And I'm the only one left. And soon I'll be gone. Abe McDonald also asked Frenchie McCormick a question. So many people were curious about this answer. Did you really know Billy the Kid? Because he had become a legendary American figure by now. Remember, Billy had been in Tascosa before some of his legendary kills and then his infamous run-in when Pat Garrett killed him. Frenchie McCormick replied, I knew him well, and I knew Pat Garrett too. Billy lived here for a year and a half, and I used to see him, and we became well acquainted. He was always heavily armed, but that wasn't unusual in those days. Everyone went around with two heavy six-shooters sagging from their belt. We knew that Billy the Kid and his gang were bandits and horse and cattle thieves and killers, but they came here with horses to sell, and our cattlemen needed those horses. And we didn't mind him. He was good-natured and had a pleasant smile. Although I've heard from men who saw him do it, that he would often wear that smile when he killed people. And about that infamous Tascosa gunfight, Frenchie explained she was there. She lived in town at the time, and she had often thought about that fight. One minute, men on horses, others in the saloon with their cards in their hands. The next minute, a few men dead in the street. And the next day, buried up on Boot Hill to sleep forever and ever until the last judgment day. The four men were carried past her door the next day, and she fell in with the procession and went to the funeral in Boot Hill. It wasn't much of a funeral, as she put it. There wasn't a preacher within 200 miles, and no one had a Bible or a prayer book. There wasn't a soul in Tascosa that could say a prayer at the funerals, so they all just tried to look as solemn as they could while the men were buried. As Abe McDonald wrapped up his conversation with Frenchie McCormick, she looked at him and she said, I often look up at Boot Hill, and I think about what a strange thing life and death is. A few years later, in 1939, Frenchie McCormick was in her 80s, living alone in a ghost town, living in a home that was run down, had no electricity or running water, still insisting the town could and would come back someday. When her health began failing, she allowed herself to be removed to Channing, Texas. That was in 1939. The only condition was that she be brought back to join her husband when she died. On Monday, January 14th of 1941, the Amarillo Times printed an obituary that read, "A new grave in an old cemetery will mark the end of one of the most colorful and mysterious characters of the South, that of Mrs. Mickey McCormick, who died in her sleep on January the 12th. Mrs. McCormick, the blue-eyed Frenchie of old Tascosa, would have been 88 years old in August. So far as known, there are no relatives. Mrs. McCormick has been away from her Louisiana home at least 70 years. She never mentioned her family or revealed her identity. Efforts of friends to find Frenchie's long-lost family failed. Frenchie died with her secret, just as she planned. And she will have her last wish. One of the last of the girls of the Golden West will be buried beside her husband, Mickey. He and Mrs. McCormick had pledged to each other that they would never, ever leave each other or this little town of Tascosa." Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can learn more about the ghost town of Tascosa, Texas, and see pictures of Frenchie McCormick and her husband, Mickey, in our Facebook group. Just search for Southern Mysteries Podcast. You can also connect on Twitter. You can follow me at Mysteries Pod and on Instagram at Southern Mysteries. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode for you. Thanks for listening.